Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, May the 31st, 2021. This is Memorial Day. I'm Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening for a Memorial Day reflection on the sacrifices made by so many Americans and their families over the history of our nation. First, though, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How you doing?
Hey, David, how are you doing? And happy Memorial Day to everybody out there, and hope everybody's enjoying some good barbecue and maybe a cold beer, hot dogs, good barbecue, good Memorial Day food. This is Memorial Day, and we've got a special show for everybody tonight. Before we begin, I want to remind everybody that you know, if for some reason you want to call in, feel free to do so. Probably going to sit back and listen to the shows. Tonight we have, many Americans have forgotten why we have Memorial Day. And they only think of it as a day off, going to the mall, hanging out in the summer, going to the Jersey Shore. I know that back in my Jersey days, that's the first day to hit Jersey Shore is Memorial Day. However, that's exactly why it's so important that we take some time this evening to offer some words to reflect upon. This evening, we will hear the words of four of our most elegant commanders-in-chief, including Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, and Barack Obama. We will also hear from two current leaders in the government, Thomas Murphy, the VA's acting Undersecretary of Benefits, and Deb Haaland, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior, with Memorial Day messages. All should be very inspiring. But before we begin that, David, I mentioned before we started the show that I got a few really good BVA decisions today, which it's great that they came in on or about Memorial Day for some of these veterans. And I want to highlight just one thing, and David, you and I talk about this all the time, the importance of having your veteran make a statement. A detailed statement about their service. And when I was reviewing these decisions, all three judges made a point to highlight that in their opinion, in their decisions. So veterans, if you're out there and you've got cases that are going to go up before the Board of Veteran Appeals, talk to your representative, talk to your lawyer, tell them that you want to sit back and you want to give them a detailed statement about your services, your experience in service, what happened to you, how you are today. I was really taken back by how important, in my cases, those statements were and the testimony was to the judges, because it enabled the judges to dot their I's, cross their T's, and check all the appropriate boxes. So with that in mind, I'm going to pass it over to you, David, but if you have any comments along those lines, feel free to chime in.
Okay, well, thanks. Yeah, that's all good stuff, and maybe at the end of our Memorial Day reflections we can get back to that. The history of the United States has unfortunately been intertwined with war. It is appropriate then that we begin our Memorial Day show this evening by going back nearly 160 years to one of the most famous speeches by a president, the Gettysburg Address by President Abraham Lincoln. He delivered that speech during the American Civil War. The war was still going on. He did so at the dedication of the Soldiers' National Cemetery in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, on the afternoon of November 19, 1863, 4.5 months after the Union armies defeated those of the Confederacy at the Battle of Gettysburg. It is one of the best-known speeches in American history. The Battle of Gettysburg was fought July 1st through 3rd, 1863, in and around the town of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, by Union and Confederate forces. The battle involved the largest number of casualties of the entire war and is often described as the war's turning point due to the Union's decisive victory in concurrence with the Siege of Vicksburg. Union Major General George Meade's Army of the Potomac defeated attacks by Confederate General Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia, halting Lee's invasion of the North. Since audio recordings had not yet been invented in 1863, we don't have an audio tape of President Lincoln's speech, but we do have the speech as spoken by Jeff Daniels. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the first tape this evening.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Now, before hearing from some other commanders in chief this evening, I'd like to first introduce two brief messages from current government leaders. The next tape is from Thomas J. Murphy, the current acting Undersecretary of Benefits for the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. Doug, if you'll please roll the second tape.
Every year, our nation comes together on Memorial Day to remember the service members who made the ultimate sacrifice to protect our American freedoms. First known as Decoration Day, the holiday originated in the years following the Civil War. To honor those who perished during the conflict, Americans across the country held tributes to fallen loved ones, friends, and comrades, decorating their graves with flowers. As the decades passed, the holiday evolved to honor and remember service members from all American wars. Today, we continue to observe Memorial Day by visiting national cemeteries, attending parades, and holding picnics. And while we have come to recognize the day as the unofficial beginning of summer, it is important for us to never forget the meaning of the holiday. From the village green of Lexington to the mountains and valleys of Afghanistan and all the battlefields in between, millions of Americans have selflessly laced up their boots in defense of our nation. Today, I encourage us all, veterans, service members, families, and federal employees and civilians alike, to take a moment and remember those we lost in service to our nation. Even simple actions, such as sharing your favorite story of a family member, friend, or neighbor, or taking part in the 1 minute National Moment of Remembrance at 3 p.m. local time, help pay tribute to the brave and selfless service members who are no longer with us. On behalf of the entire VBA, I am eternally grateful to those who serve our country, and I salute your service.
Next, we'll hear the Memorial Day 2021 message from Deb Haaland, the Secretary of the United States Department of the Interior. Doug, if you'll please play the third tape.
Hello, everyone. I'm Secretary Deb Haaland, and I'm speaking with you from the Vietnam Women's Memorial in Washington, D.C. Each Memorial Day, we remember and honor the service members who made the ultimate sacrifice to protect our country. This memorial is particularly important because it reminds us that our country also has many unsung heroes. Throughout history, women have proudly served as nurses, medics, communication specialists, and air traffic controllers who serve in combat zones. Too often, these heroes are not given the recognition they deserve. At the Department of the Interior, we're determined to tell everyone's story in America through opportunities on public lands in all communities. We have a responsibility to lift up these stories to ensure that their sacrifices are never forgotten. On this Memorial Day, please take a moment to reflect on those who gave their lives so that we can live in a country that values democracy as we strive to build a more perfect union. To the families who have lost a service member, thank you. I know that words cannot fill the space that your loved one left behind, but know that we will honor their sacrifice every day by working to make our country a better place for future generations.
The Civil War was a very devastating war for our nation, but sadly it was not the war to end all wars. In the first half of the 20th century, the world endured two world wars, the first between 1914 and 1918, and the second between 1939 and 1945. To reflect upon what the nation was going through during the Second World War, I thought it fitting to listen to the famous D-Day speech of President Franklin Roosevelt, delivered by radio address to the nation on June the 6th, 1944, as our forces were invading France to free Europe from the Nazis. This speech, while not a Memorial Day speech, provides us with a reminder about the sacrifices made by our service members and the hope of our nation for the restoration of peace and freedom. Doug, please play tape number 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment that troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed, but we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day, without rest, until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war. For these men are lately drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest, They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise and tolerance and goodwill among all thy people. They yearn but for the end of battle, for their return to the haven of home. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom. And for us at home, fathers, mothers, children, wives, sisters, and brothers of brave men overseas, whose thoughts and prayers are ever with them, help us, Almighty God, to rededicate ourselves in renewed faith in Thee in this hour of great sacrifice. Many people have urged that I call the nation into a single day of special prayer. But because the road is long and the desire is great, I ask that our people devote themselves in a continuance of prayer. As we rise to each new day, and again when each day is spent, let words of prayer be on our lips, invoking thy help to our efforts. Give us strength, too, strengthen our daily tasks, to redouble the contributions we make in the physical and the material support of our armed forces. And let our hearts be stout, to wait out the long travel, to bear sorrows that may come, to impart our courage unto our sons, wheresoever they may be. And, O Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in Thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, faith in our united crusade. Let not the keenness of our spirit ever be dulled. Let not the impacts of temporary events, of temporal matters of but fleeting moment, let not these deter us in our unconquerable purpose. With thy blessing, we shall prevail over the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations into a world unity that will spell a sure peace, a peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
Amen. Amen. What a wonderful prayer and speech, and I dare say I'd be surprised if in our much more atheistic society that we have today that we'd have a commander-in-chief with the guts to deliver such a truthful prayer. Now, while our troops were ultimately successful in World War II, the decades following that horrific war saw many smaller wars, as well as the so-called Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union. So let's fast forward to the year 1982 and listen to then-President Ronald Reagan on Memorial Day of that year. Doug, if you'll please roll the fifth tape.
In America's cities and towns today, flags will be placed on graves and cemeteries. Public officials will speak of the sacrifice and the valor of those whose memory we honor. I have no illusions about what little I can add now to the silent testimony of those who gave their lives willingly for their country. Words are even more feeble on this Memorial Day, for the sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who were loved and who, in return, loved their countrymen enough to die for them. Yet we must try to honor them, not for their sakes alone, but for our own. And if words cannot repay the debt we owe these men, surely with our actions, we must strive to keep faith with them and with a vision that led them to battle and a final sacrifice. Our first obligation to them and ourselves is plain enough. The United States and the freedom for which it stands, the freedom for which they died, must endure and prosper. Their lives remind us that freedom is not bought cheaply. It has a cost. It imposes a burden. And just as they whom we commemorate were willing to sacrifice, so too must we, in a less final, less heroic way, be willing to give of ourselves. Each died for a cause he considered more important than his own life. Well, they didn't volunteer to die. They volunteered to defend values for which men have always been willing to die if need be. The values which make up what we call civilization. And how they must have wished, in all the ugliness that war brings, that no other generation of young men to follow would have to undergo that same experience. As we honor their memory today, let us pledge that their lives, their sacrifices, their valor shall be justified and remembered for as long as God gives life to this nation. And let us also pledge to do our utmost to carry out what must have been their wish, that no other generation of young men will ever have to share their experiences and repeat their sacrifice. Earlier today, with the music that we have heard and that of our national anthem, I can't claim to know the words of all the national anthems in the world, but I don't know of any other that ends with a question and a challenge as ours does. Does that flag still wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? That is what we must do.
As we know, the Cold War ended in 1989 when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union broke apart over the next couple of years. Sadly, we know, however, that war did not end. The world saw many smaller wars, including ones in the Middle East between Iraq and Iran between 1980 and 1988. We saw Iraq's invasion of Kuwait in August 1990, leading to the war known as Desert Storm in 1991. We saw the 2001 invasion of Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks and the invasion of Iraq in 2003. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq dragged on for many years. Let's now go to Memorial Day of 2016 and listen to then-President Barack Obama. Doug, please play tape 6.
I'm honored to be with you once again as we pay our respects as Americans to those who gave their lives for us all. Here at Arlington, The deafening sounds of combat have given way to the silence of these sacred hills. The chaos and confusion of battle has yielded to perfect, precise rows of peace. The Americans who rest here and their families, the best of us, those from whom we asked everything, ask of us today only one thing in return, that we remember them. If you look closely at the white markers that grace these hills, one thing you'll notice is that so many of the years, dates of birth and dates of death, are so close together. They belong to young Americans, those who never lived to be honored as veterans for their service, men who battled their own brothers in Civil War, those who fought as a band of brothers an ocean away, men and women who redefined heroism for a new generation. They are generals buried beside privates they led. Americans known as Dad or Mom. Some only known to God. Mr. Hallinan, a Marine who then watched over these grounds, has said, "Everyone here is someone's hero. Those who rest beneath this silence, not only here at Arlington, but at veterans' cemeteries across our country and around the world, and all who still remain missing, they didn't speak the loudest about their patriotism. They let their actions do that. Whether they stood up in times of war, signed up in times of peace, or were called up by a draft board, they embodied the best of America. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no greater responsibility than leading our men and women in uniform. I have no more solemn obligation than sending them into harm's way. I think about this every time I approve an operation as President. Every time, as a husband and father, that I sign a condolence letter. Every time Michelle and I sit at the bedside of a wounded warrior, or grieve and hug members of a Gold Star family. Less than 1% of our nation wears the uniform, and so few Americans see this patriotism with their own eyes or know someone who exemplifies it. But every day there are American families who pray for the sound of a familiar voice when the phone rings, or the sound of a loved one's letter or email arriving. More than 1 million times in our history, it didn't come. And instead, a car pulled up to the house, and there was a knock on the front door, and the sound of taps floated through a cemetery's trees. For us, the living, those of us who still have a voice, it is our responsibility, our obligation, to fill that silence with our love and our support and our gratitude, and not just with words, but with our actions. For truly remembering and truly honoring these fallen Americans means being there for their parents and their spouses and their children, like the boys and girls here today wearing red shirts and bearing photos of the fallen. Your moms and dads would be so proud of you, and we are too. Truly remembering means that after our fallen heroes gave everything to get their battle buddies home, we have to make sure our veterans get everything that they have earned, from good health care to a good job. And we have to do better. Our work is never done. We have to be there not only when we need them, but when they need us. 30 days before he would be laid to rest, a short walk from here, President Kennedy told us that a nation reveals itself not only by the people it produces, but by those it remembers. Not everyone will serve. Not everyone will visit this national sanctuary. but we remember our best in every corner of our country from which they came. We remember them by teaching our children at schools with fallen heroes' names, like Dory Miller Elementary in San Antonio, or being good neighbors in communities named after great generals like McPherson, Kansas, or when we walk down First Sergeant Bobby Mendez Way in Brooklyn, or drive across the Hoover Dam on a bridge that bears Pat Tillman's name. We reveal ourselves in our words and deeds, but also by the simple act of listening. My fellow Americans, today and every day, listen to the stories these Gold Star families and veterans have to tell. Ask about who he or she was, why they volunteered. Hear from those who loved them about what their smile looked like and their laugh sounded like and the dreams they had for their lives. Since we gathered here 1 year ago, more than 20 brave Americans have given their lives for the security of our people in Afghanistan. We pray for them all and for their families. In Iraq, in our fight against ISIL, 3 Americans have given their lives in combat on our behalf. And today I ask you to remember their stories as well. Charles Keating IV, Charlie, or Chuck, or C4, was born into a family of veterans, all American athletes and Olympians, even a gold medalist. So naturally, Charlie and the love of his life, Brooke, celebrated their anniversary on the 4th of July. She called him the huge goofball everybody wanted to be friends with, the adventurer who surfed and spearfished and planned to sail around the world. When the Twin Towers fell, he was in high school and he decided to enlist. Joined the SEALs because he told his friends it was the hardest thing to do. He deployed to Afghanistan and 3 times to Iraq, earning a Bronze Star for Valor. And earlier this month, while assisting local forces in Iraq who had come under attack, he gave his life. A few days later, one of his platoon mates sent Charlie's parents a letter from Iraq. "Please tell everyone Chuck saved a lot of lives today," it said. He left us with that big signature smile on his handsome face as always. Chuck was full of aloha, but was also a ferocious warrior. So today we honor Chief Special Warfare Officer Charles Keating IV. Lewis Carden was the 6th of 7 children, a Californian with an infectious wit who always had a joke at the ready to help someone get through a tough time. When his siblings ran around the house as kids, his mom, Pat, would yell after them, "Watch that baby's safety margin." And today she realizes that what she was really doing was raising a Marine. As a teenager, he proudly signed up. Louis graduated high school on a Friday. 3 days later, on Monday morning, the Marines came to pick him up. That was 10 years ago. One morning this March, a Marine knocked on his mother's door again. On his 5th tour at a fire base in Iraq, Louis gave his life while protecting the Marines under his command. Putting others before himself was what Louis did best. He chose to live in the barracks with his buddies, even when he could have taken a house off base. He volunteered to babysit for friends who needed a date night. He just earned a promotion to mentor his fellow Marines. When they brought Louis home, hundreds of strangers lined freeway overpasses in the streets of Southern California to salute him. And today we salute Staff Sergeant Louis Carden. Joshua Wheeler's sister says he was exactly what was right about this world. He came from nothing and he really made something of himself. As a kid, Josh was the one who made sure his brother and 4 half-sisters were dressed and fed and off to school. When there wasn't food in the cupboard, he grabbed his hunting rifle and came back with a deer for dinner. When his country needed him, he enlisted in the Army at age 19. He deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan 14 times, earned 11 Bronze Stars, 4 for valor. Last October, as ISIL terrorists prepared to execute 70 hostages, Josh and his fellow special ops went in and rescued them. Every single one walked free. "We were already dead," one of the hostages said. "Then God sent us a force from the sky." That force was the U.S. Army, including Josh Wheeler. Josh was the doting dad who wrote notes to his kids in the stacks of books he read. Flying home last summer to be with his wife Ashley, who was about to give birth, he scribbled one note in the novel he was reading, just to tell his unborn son he was on his way. Ashley Wheeler is with us here today, holding their 10-month-old son, David. Ashley says Josh's memory makes her think about how can she be a better citizen. And she hopes it's what other people think about too. Today, this husband and father rests here in Arlington in Section 60. And as Americans, we resolve to be better. Better people, better citizens, because of Master Sergeant Joshua Wheeler. You know, a nation reveals itself not only by the people it produces, but by those it remembers. We do so not just by hoisting a flag, but by lifting up our neighbors, not just by pausing in silence, but by practicing in our own lives the ideals of opportunity and liberty and equality that they fought for. We can serve others and contribute to the causes they believed in, and above all, keep their stories alive so that one day when he grows up and thinks of his dad, an American like David Wheeler can tell them as well the stories of the lives that others gave for all of us. We are so proud of them. We are so grateful for their sacrifice. We are so thankful to those families of the fallen. May God bless our fallen and their families. May He bless all of you, and may He forever bless these United States of America.
Well, what are your thoughts about what we should be learning about war, not just on Memorial Day, but every day? My view is we need renewed dedication to finding ways to resolve human conflict and international conflict in peaceful ways. One very small institution in that effort was created by the United States Congress in 1984 by legislation signed by then-President Ronald Reagan. It is the United States Institute of Peace. It is doing important work for the cause of world peace, but it could be doing a lot more if Congress gave it the needed funds and resources. You can learn more about the United States Institute of Peace at its website, which is easy to remember. It's usip.org. And as Interior Secretary Deb Haaland said in her remarks near the beginning of this show, one of the best ways we can honor those that have died in the service of our country is to do all we can to make our country a better country and to also work hard for peace. That's really probably the best legacy and the best memorial we can offer. So with that in mind, I'd like to take a few minutes this evening to introduce our listeners who may not already be familiar with the United States Institute of Peace. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the seventh tape.
The United States Institute of Peace implements our nation's values and strengthens its security by reducing violence abroad. In some of the world's most dangerous regions, USIP's mediators, trainers, and analysts work on the ground to help local people resolve the conflicts that fuel wars and extremism. Terrorism or warfare have destabilized 92 countries, killing more than 100,000 people each year and uprooting most of the world's 65 million displaced people, the most ever recorded. USIP's work saves lives and resources because preventing wars costs a fraction of containing them with military interventions. In 2014, ISIS militants in Iraq massacred 1,700 young Iraqi cadets and soldiers, mostly Shia Muslims, near the city of Tikrit. The trauma reopened old divisions. Shia tribes accused Sunni Muslims of supporting the slaughter.
ولما سمعت بهذا الحدث من خلال وسائل الإعلام عرفت أن هذا الجريمة راح يكون له دور كبير في زيادة الفرقة بين العراقيين زيادة المشكلة.
Sunnis fled their homes, fearing violent retaliation by the grieving Shia. Tensions rose, and a cycle of revenge appeared inevitable. The U.S. Institute of Peace stepped in. As an independent, nonpartisan organization created and funded by Congress, USIP has the credibility to bring people together across divides. It has worked nonstop amid Iraq's war, building the relationships of trust that can foster peace, even amid crisis. USIP works with American policymakers and abroad with national government leaders and with neighborhood grassroots activists. From empowering Colombian women mediators to training peacekeepers across the African continent, linking young leaders to counter violent extremism in their communities, and supporting peaceful elections in Afghanistan and Burma. Following the massacre near Tikrit, USIP saw the danger of spiraling violence and reached out to bring rival groups together.
وكانوا ميسرين جيدين كلهم فهم وفروا لقاء لجميع الأطراف العراقية المؤثرة بالساحة اللي هي القيادة الدينية والقيادة السياسية والقيادة العشائرية في
USIP and its Iraqi partners mediated a peace accord, allowing more than 300,000 people to return home. Markets reopened, and life returned to the streets of Tikrit. USIP's small staff works across five continents, from offices in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Burma, Iraq, and Tunisia, building the relationships and training the partners that can help countries end violence and better resolve their own conflicts.
لولا الله ثم اللي قائمين على الفكرة هذه لكان مجزرة سبايكر يعني غطت بظلالها يعني جزء كبير من العراق لكن الحمد لله.
Witnesses of USIP's work, from victims of war to America's military leaders, underscore that this building of peace has saved lives, brought refugees home, and reduced military interventions abroad. Through USIP, America shows that peace is possible.
Well, thank you to the United States Institute of Peace for that short tape. For those I hope are interested in learning more about the United States Institute of Peace and its work, as well as to utilize its materials, it has essentially the Peace Academy as part of its charter. It's supposed to be a think tank, but also an action organization, and it was created by Congress as an organization which will essentially help provide tools to peacemakers, through mediation, arbitration, but also education, and similar to the service academies in teaching and preparing people, officers, for military service. However, because of its relatively small source of funds through Congress, which is recent years has been about $40 million or less, which is peanuts, essentially, for an organization of its importance, and only about 300 employees. The USIP is not making the impact that it could. And I think on Memorial Day, as some of our commanders-in-chief that we heard from, as well as some of the other speakers, that if we want to honor the legacy of those that have died in war, the best thing we can do is promote peace so that fewer Americans in the future and fewer people around the world are killed in war, and we all learn peaceful ways to resolve what is inevitable. Human conflict is inevitable. International conflict is inevitable. No one's naive about that, but we ought to be able to find ways to resolve those in peaceful ways while still holding true to our values. So with that in mind, if any of our callers want to call in and offer their thoughts, our toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Until then, Richard Hurley, if you have any thoughts on that, please offer.
Well, those were great speeches, David, great speeches. And why don't you remind our listeners what the budget is for the United States Institute of Peace?
Well, it's been running less than $40 million each of the last few years, and actually it wasn't too many years ago when some members of Congress, of both political parties, by the way, there were a few members of Congress that were attempting to zero out the budget, which would have effectively killed the USIP. But fortunately, it survived those efforts. Rick, I know you attended a conference back in 2018, one of its annual peace conferences at the USIP. Maybe if you want to share your thoughts, your experience on having actually been at the USIP.
Sure, thank you. I thought it was great. I mean, it's like being in a retreat. If anyone's ever been to a retreat house, and spent a weekend or even just a day or a night at a retreat house, and the feeling you get inside, the spiritual feeling that you get inside a retreat, well, you kind of have that same feeling inside USIP. I mean, everybody's there for the same reason. The mood is upbeat. The educational opportunities that are inside the building are unbelievable. It offers so much. And if anyone wants to, if you're in D.C. and you're up by the mall, you can get inside there. It would be a great opportunity for you to see something that is a little unique. I think it's very unique. That's kind of the feeling I had. And, of course, the lectures that we heard were terrific. And, the different people we met. You know, we were there filming for our own documentary. And we met some very, really cool people. Everyone was like-minded. Everybody's, the whole idea of the USIP was on everyone's lips, and everyone's talking the same thing. And so there's a lot of adrenaline. Then, of course, you walk away from there, and you walk out into the mall, and you see all the memorials, Vietnam, and all the other memorials there, the World War II. It's a unique experience. I enjoyed it. I can't wait to go back now that COVID's kind of calming down. I can't wait to go back up there and do it all over again. How about you, David?
Yeah, hopefully they'll resume their annual conference, which I think is usually in October. But they have lots of events through the year. And if you go to their website, usip.org, you'll see, although, with COVID, they were doing a lot of things remotely, but they have conferences going on all the time. They have experts in different areas, and they also post them on their YouTube channel, United States Institute of Peace channel on YouTube, so you can watch those. But my personal belief is that Congress, I'd like to see a poll of members of Congress and see how many of them even know about the USIP, quite frankly. It wouldn't surprise me if there are a lot of people in Congress that don't even know it exists, quite frankly. But it's, I think its budget needs to be multiplied 100-fold, as well as its the number of its staff. It needs to be a serious organization. It's literally right across the street, Rick, I know you know this, from part of the United States Department of State. You know, the State Department has quite a few buildings, and it's the USIP headquarters. It's a very, very modern building, right on the far northwest corner of the mall. You know, it's not too far from, like you said, Rick, the war memorials. It's quite interesting, the, you know, the contrast there. And but it's really close to the State Department, and I just wish the State Department, you know, would work more closely with the USIP. But I think it comes down to funding. People need to be aware of it, and I have never heard on any of the so-called mainstream media, or even most of the not mainstream media, regardless of the politics.
Did he find out what he got on the ECP?
I have never heard the United States Institute of Peace mentioned, which of course is a sad reflection of things. So, but to bring this back to our show today, which is Memorial Day, it's a day to reflect on the lives and the sacrifices by the hundreds of thousands of Americans that have died in wars, and how can we best honor their legacy. I think we need to remember their sacrifices. We need to remember the sacrifices that their families made and continue to make. You know, the spouses who had to carry on their lives, the children who grew up, you know, without one of their parents, and other family members and friends who were affected for the rest of their lives because of the death of their loved one. And I think it's something that that most Americans, or too many Americans, I should say, seem to forget about that on Memorial Day. They see it as just the beginning of summertime, and it really needs to be a day of a reflection. We need to get away from this disconnect between most of society and those in the military. This disconnect made worse by the fact that we don't have a military draft, so that those that serve tend to be a very small, sort of an isolated segment of our country. But ultimately, I think on the positive legacy that we should take every Memorial Day is, how are we all working to make our country better, and what are we doing to help promote peace, so that we don't keep adding to Arlington Cemetery and all the other national cemeteries. Well, we're about running out of time, Rick. I know one of our things that we want to talk about every week for the benefit of veterans and their families is a important program called Coaching Into Care. So if you wouldn't mind maybe sharing that with us.
Yeah, let me talk. The Coaching Into Care helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and with loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. It's hours on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line can help. 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Remember what our speaker said tonight about taking care of our veterans. Let's go out and do that. Let's make that a commitment. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Well, it's time for us to go this evening. We'd like to thank you all for listening to our Memorial Day show here on the Veterans News Hour. We're on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans nationwide VA disability cases. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. And we hope you'll tune in next week at the same time and same station, which is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time, here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Stay safe.
مشكلة.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.